This is Edge Cases. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Will French.
And our topic this week is...
Swift. How did you know this? Did I give it away?
That's even better than I was hoping. I was actually hoping to get, you know, the reaction from you like, what? How did you know that? But having said it at basically the same time is even better.
Yeah.
You mentioned it.
Okay.
Before. Okay. I mean, there's no magic here, right? I didn't like read your mind or anything. Yeah. You had just mentioned in passing that you wanted to get Swift in because this was your last topic.
Yeah.
On the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Sad moment.
Yeah. So I was actually hoping that I could entice you to do 101st episode by taking away your ability to mention the topic. So you would have to do another one just because of that.
I like your strategy. Unfortunately, failed.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Last Wolf topic. But before we get to that, I have a little bit of follow-up. So it has come to my attention that one of our listeners is subjecting his family to us against their will. And I just wanted to say, apparently they're not real happy about this. And I would say to them that we, as the hosts of the podcast that they're being forced to listen to, agree with them that they should be allowed to listen to something else.
I agree, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You're not gonna fight me on this. You're not gonna torment them.
I think it's like some UN charter thing, right? I think if this falls under torture, yeah.
Well, there's certainly US stuff about cruel and unusual punishment. So, So yeah. So you have our support to turn us off right now. Okay. All right. Off you go.
Okay. So first off, I'm sad that I didn't get to two of my topics that's on my things to talk about list.
Oh, for God's sakes. Yes, I'm going.
Because it would have been a good backgrounder to refer back to this. When Uli did his talk about on Edge Cases 17, the title was Then You're Just Writing C++, where we talked about C++.
It actually wasn't Uli's topic, it was mine, but he was there for it.
Okay.
This was before I saw the light and had my guest hosts do their own topic.
Yeah, I really wish I could have done my take on C++, but maybe that's the title.
Now you never will.
That's fine. Maybe that's the title is good enough, and which I think I've actually mentioned before, that C++, my drug addicted... my exactly. C++, my drug-addicted little sister. And I think I've mentioned the drug-addicted little sister kind of metaphor here before, but the long and short of it is the idea that it's big problems, but I have this kinship with it. So if you say good things about C++, I will talk about how bad it is. If you say bad things about C++, I'll talk about how good it is.
Well, does that make you in this metaphor like Objective-C?
Oh, no.
Because you're related to C++?
Oh, that's actually, I had not considered the ramifications of this, so.
Yeah.
You're always one step ahead. Mm. And the other topic that I'm sad I didn't get to is, it was good things about Objective-C. Because.
Well, we don't talk about the good things about anything.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, because I feel that a lot of my criticisms of Swift might be kind of saying, oh, you're the curmudgeon, right? And Objective-C has a lot of good things to it that I wish I could have this kind of cataloged before Swift was dropped on us. But now it all seems like back pining for the good old days type stuff.
Right. So just reflexively being against anything new.
Yeah. So there's some of my regrets. Anyway, so first off, it seems like, I forget, I think it was Federici who put up the slide that kind of put the quote, kind of gave it kind of the tagline for Swift, and it was billed as Objective-C without the C.
Right.
Totally
misleading.
Yeah, well, yes. And first off, I'm going to paraphrase my favorite George Box quote here, that all quotes are wrong, some quotes are useful. it's really a bad idea to try pigeonhole something as big as a programming language with just like a little tagline type of thing. But I think it is helpful.
I would call it C++ without the Objective-C.
Okay. That's yes. So I have...
There are better one phrase... descriptions of it, I believe, than what they used.
I have three here. So yours is C++ without the Objective-C?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what you said?
I just came up with that, but yes.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay. So Ken Ferry tweeted that I do not think Objective-C... I do think that Objective-C without the C is just false. I don't know why they said it. It's C++++. That's okay. His take on it.
Sure.
Jay Freeman apparently said that Swift is like as if C++ was toll-free bridged to Objective-C. But my favorite is Michael Donald Buckley's, and his is C++ without the C.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the common theme here is that definitely a lot of C++-isms in Swift.
Which is not surprising, because it was written by people who live and breathe C++ every day.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So overall, I see Swift as a very good thing. So Apple... With Objective-C, I've been against Objective-C for a long time, and
really,
and I definitely have a chip on my shoulder about it. But that definitely
the things you learn about a guy in the last topic episode that he does.
But I definitely have gotten happier with it since Apple actually started advancing it, where it was adding new features and there were just things that were almost intolerable about it, but. That's like the crazy amounts of duplication you had to do. That's with getters and setters, stuff like that. And properties and auto synthesize really helped with that. So Objective-C helped advance the industry. I got programmers used to the idea of message sending. And obviously everyone complained about the square brackets. But it feels like, and even, you know, even though it was became the premier language for programming Mac apps, it we can pretty much thank iOS for making it popular enough that it got on everyone's radar and it became widespread. And right. I'm very happy that in our field, in our industry that's dominated with C, C++, and Java, it really helped, you took this kind of obscure language with this unique ideas, and we basically kind of raised the collective IQ of programmers with them being exposed to Objective-C and the way it did things. And don't get me wrong, it's a C-based language, but it opened some eyes, and it was widespread. Even though a lot of programmers fought at kicking and screaming, it introduced them to new concepts, and even helped dispel myths of things like, you can't possibly have a message sending that's just too slow to put in small talk style message sending. That's just way too slow to put in a real thing when you can achieve 60 frames per second scrolling on original iPhone hardware. So it helped dispel a lot of myths. And so I would say in today's industry, I think in terms of the players that can rapidly push a new language, I think pretty much only Apple and Google can do it. Google seems pretty wedded to Java so far. I know that their Go is becoming more popular inside and outside of Google, but I don't see them saying, okay, for the next Android operating system, now you get to this program in Go. That's our new preferred language. I don't think that's happening soon. But Apple coming out with Swift and is maybe in the unique position and the unique willingness to actually push a new language with things that most programmers haven't dealt with, and all programmers haven't dealt with in this particular combination. Swift is unique and insightful in terms of the features it brings to the table and how they mix up the cake, mix up the batter. Right. Mm-hmm. There was this kind of breathless Wired piece, and I don't even have the title handy, but it was something like how Swift is going to make programming so much better in every single way, and I'll link to it. And
it better than that cover from the last episode?
That's the Long Boom. Long Boom is kind of naive. This one is definitely kind of a puff piece, but I largely agree with it that it's going to really, like Objective-C, introduce new concepts to programmers who really can't be bothered to up their language right. game.
Yeah,
Swift's going to do the same thing. I've seen an interest in language that I haven't seen from other developers, And especially Apple developers, that seem kind of, they tend to focus more on the external of their app than the internals, and perhaps rightfully. But it's very interesting. I don't want to kind of talk about the kind of the mixture of Swift's specific features, because I have larger ideas, but it has a lot of good ideas and is implemented in good ways. And it has things that we've been missing for a long time. It has newish ideas that it may be unproven yet, but I think they are solid enough. So it's altogether, I would say, a thumbs up. One thing that I see is an issue about ease of learning. This is somewhat contentious. So Drew McCormick had a tweet in that he said, Objective-C is a subset of Swift. The syntax of Swift is cleaner, but there are many more concepts than Objective-C. And this is true. It's part of it is that we look upon C in our modern industry, and we kind of think that, oh, it's this simple language, because we have Objective-C and C++, and we've bolted a lot of stuff on top of C. One thing to realize that C itself is actually quite large. It's not this small a language. It has a lot of corners in it. It can do a lot of things. So we kind of overplay how simple it is. The Raphael Buglakjowski replied to Drew McCormick's tweet saying, "Learning Swift in depth is harder, but I would argue that the basic things are easier to learn for beginners. So, and I agree with this. I agree with both Drew's original tweet and Raphael's response that Swift is a larger language than Objective-C. It has more concepts, I believe, than even C++. And C++ is considered a rather large language.
What? No, I don't think Swift has more stuff than C++.
Oh, yeah?
C++ is gigantic. It's a multi-paradigm language. I don't think...
Swift is a multi-paradigm language.
Sure, but it doesn't have everything that C++ does, I don't think, anyway.
Oh, I'm not saying it is a pure superset of C++, but in terms of concepts, it has more concepts than C++, I believe. I might be wrong about that, but obviously you don't believe me. But the problem with C++, as everyone who reads the Scott Myers books understands, is that C++ is a multi-paradigm language that's done a kind of Frankenstein style that piece together, and the pieces don't work well with each other.
Right.
And so you really do need to read the Scott Myers books to understand kind of like the eras and the strata of C++ and what parts work with what, and what you should, if you're using this feature, you probably shouldn't use that feature, and how they interact. And so, yeah. Swift is obviously much better designed. And that's why I like Michael Donald Buckley's C++ without the C. Because you can, the idea, obviously C++ is compatible with C. And C is a huge language in itself. And it paints them into all sorts of corners. And if you could imagine C++, like the next version of C++, where they drop compatibility with C, where they don't have to be the strict superset of C, you could see them making all sorts of simplifications. And that's what Swift feels like to me. It feels like, because it doesn't have to be language compatible with C, a lot of the concepts can be made simpler, and you can make sure C++ doesn't have a lot of excuses in terms of the Frankenstein nature, but if they could start over where they even didn't have to be compatible with existing C++ code bases, it almost feels like it would be Swift or very Swift-ish. Interesting tidbit from my past is that in the mid-1990s, I read a book about Ada that was actually written in, I think, around 1985. So this is apparently what I do for fun, is that I read decade-old books about languages that no one uses. And that probably clues in a lot of what you need to know about me. And one of the reasons I read the book is because I had heard that Ada was this huge, complicated language, and it had every feature under the sun, and they didn't know when to say stop. So I was curious what this language was like. So I read the book cover to cover, and I found out that it was complicated, perhaps in terms of the languages of the day, but it seemed to have just as much stuff going on as C++. And there's again, we have this myopia where we look at C as this simpler language. And instead, it's programming has gotten, like, our language, the barrier to entry, or maybe a bar. I don't know what metaphor to use here. But the idea is that there's this level of complexity in our programming languages that this keeps on rising, and slowly through the decades. And what we considered simple now was considered complicated 20 years back. So I don't know if it's an indictment against our industry or if it's we're actually improving. I don't know. I mentioned in EdgeCases 13, AppleScript's glorious failure. There was a Stroustrup interview, and I think it's good enough that I'll quote it here. It was an interview, and he said, "The idea of programming as a semi-skilled task, practiced by people with a few months' training, is dangerous. We wouldn't tolerate plumbers or accountants that are poorly educated. We don't have as a name that architecture of buildings and engineering of bridges and trains should become more accessible to people with progressively less training. Indeed, one serious problem is that currently too many software developers are undereducated and undertrained. In any case, I don't think it's true that programming languages are so difficult to learn. For example, every first-year university biology textbook contains more details and deeper theory than even an expert-level programming language book. Most applications involve standards, operating system, libraries, and tools that far exceed modern programming languages in complexity." So I have to reluctantly agree with Stroustrup. Maybe he's the new Rumsfeld. I feel that as our languages get more complicated, it actually fits probably the domains that we're having to tackle. And so I think kind of like maybe language reboots like Swift, where that I argue actually introduces more concepts than C++, but in a way that better works with itself. It's a good way of managing the complexity, and it shouldn't. So Drew's right that Swift is a larger language in Objective-C, but I also agree with Raphael that it's structured well, and especially with playgrounds, that it's easier to learn. Kind of the basic stuff you can kind of build up on. You can start with something that works and kind of add more concepts as you go, and that's a pretty good indicator of good design. So that's me kind of talking about the upside of Swift. For the downside of Swift, I have to say that it pretty much boils down to message sending. So Daniel Dennett wrote a book called Darwin's Dangerous Idea. And in it, he says that Darwin's theory of evolution was, quote, "the greatest idea ever to occur to a human mind," unquote. And this has really stuck with me, the idea that I don't necessarily agree with it, but I can't think of anything better. And it's very powerful, the idea that we can have this idea that is actually the greatest idea ever. And Richard Dawkins went on to explain, he has this thing he calls the explanation ratio, and where he was talking about the power of Darwin's idea, that the explanation ratio is the power of a theory is equal to that which it explains divided by that which it needs to assume in order to do the explaining. And this is an economist-style equation, which I'm not really a total fan of, because it brings kind of like a science-y-ness to things that aren't, because as soon as people see equations, like, oh, it must be right. But the idea here is that, just like the theory of evolution was perhaps the greatest idea ever, message sending is kind of like that. And I have to agree with how, like, if I had, you know, a widespread popular language like C, and if I could only add one feature to it to make it a lot more powerful, message sending would be my feature. And I think that Brad Cox is right in his book, The Object-Oriented Programming, an Evolutionary Approach, where he introduced Objective-C, that message sending is a simple idea that has profound ramifications. And so I have mentioned before that I believe the future of software is in actors, which hinges on message sending. There is a blog out there called High Scalability, and in Bitly, the URL shortening service, gave a talk at the weirdly named Bacon Conference of 2014, I believe. And I was just saw this go by feed, maybe via Twitter or something like this. But it was a presentation given at BaconConf. Bitly lessons learned building a distributed system that handles 6 billion clicks a month. And kind of the takeaway there is that you've seen the idea of message sending and the idea of actors-based object models, which are actors you just can think of as objects that have maybe their own run loop type of thing. They're just, you know, they're objects that accept messages, and when they are operating a message, they can't be interrupted. You can think of, like, imagine it as if an object had its own thread, and so they provide, like, internal synchronization, just because you know that when your method is being executed, no one else, you won't be preempted and re-entered on another thread and so forth. So you can think of imagine an object that had a message queue. That's pretty good. So you look at things like service-oriented architecture, which is kind of this enterprise-y buzzword type thing. And this is basically how Bitly pulls off its stuff. And the takeaway from their slide here is that service-oriented architectures plus queues plus asynchronous messaging is really powerful. This approach isolates components, lets work happen concurrently, lets boxes fail independently while still having components be easy to reason about. And service-oriented architecture is kind of like is the enterprise-y, janky way of kind of talking about actors. And message sending is fundamental to this. So I've talked about this in EdgeCases 75, a few of my favorite things, and EdgeCases 77, prototype-based programming. Prototype-based programming is, I was more kind of focusing on the like how to define classes and how that's used. It's all about really about decoupling and what I'm about to talk about now, which is Alan Kay, one of the creators of Smalltalk, has I'm basing on his team on this. In the 1998 email to Squeak developer mailing list, he wrote, quote, "Just a gentle reminder that I took some pains at the latest Oopsla to try and remind everyone that Smalltalk is not only not a syntax or a class library, it is not even about classes. I'm sorry that I long ago coined the term objects for this topic, because it gets many people to focus on the lesser idea. The big idea is messaging. That is what the kernel of Smalltalk/Squeak is all about, and is something that was never quite completed in our Xerox PARC phase. The Japanese have a small word, ma, for that, quote, that which is in between. Perhaps the nearest English equivalent is institutional. The key to making great growable systems is more to design how its modules communicate rather than how their internal properties and behaviors should be. Think of the internet. To live, it has to allow many different kinds of ideas and realizations that are beyond a single standard, and allowing varying degrees of safe interoperability between these ideas." He then went, and this was an email from 1998. He gave a great talk called Programming and Scaling, which I'll link to. And he talks about how software, how Smalltalk and messaging is learning from biology. The idea of we're made up of cells that get their work done and signal each other to get work done. And the internet works the same way, nodes on a network passing messages around. And if really some of the largest, most complicated things that I know of, which is the human body and the internet, they both are based on this concept of these nodes that communicate. And I also will include a link in there. There's another email that I want to go into about Stack Exchange, about what did Alan Kay really mean about the term object-oriented. And so it's message sending to me. You see it at a very low level in Objective-C apps, and you see it in the very large level of the internet and human body. So I think that's a good indicator that message sending is a fundamental idea that scales really well, probably beyond anything else that we know about. And of course, the problem with Swift is that message sending is, I wouldn't call it deprecated, but it's not the default.
There is no message sending. You've been killing me here. I've been waiting for you to get to this. There's no message sending in Swift.
There is. If you inherit a Swift object from a Swift class, from NSObject, or you mark with @obc.
Well, that's Objective-C compatibility layer. That's not the basic language. The basic language is designed and meant to not have message sending as its core concept.
Yes, and that's true. So Michael Donald Buckley wrote a nice blog posting called The Case for Message Passing in Swift, and include a link to that. And so I should define my terms a little bit here and how C, C++, and Objective-C differ in terms of how they do things. In C, when you call a function, all that involves is jumping to an address. So that's pretty direct. In C++, has these things called vtables, virtual tables. In C++, you can, because it has the idea that sending, invoking a method on an object, where you, which code ends up being executed can be decided at runtime, it puts up a one layer of indirection in there. And it just goes through this vtable or an array of function pointers. The problem with this, and I'll quote Michael here, the vtable is constructed at compile time, and functions are inserted into the vtable in the order that they are declared. The compiler then translates message calls into vtable lookups. For example, some instance with an arrow foo might be translated to some instance arrow vtable 3, subscript 3. Because the compiler must know how to translate a method call into the proper vtable index, the vtable must be known at compile time and cannot be changed at runtime. In contrast, the message passing dictionary can be modified at runtime, and it's possible to send messages to a class which are not in this message passing dictionary, although you may trigger a runtime exception by doing so. This allows you to send messages that aren't known at compile time and enables some powerful metaprogramming features. Swift utilizes all three approaches. Swift classes that inherit from Objective-C classes will use message sending. Other classes will use vtables, except in cases where the compiler has enough information to call the method directly. Since Cocoa is still written in Objective-C, apps written in Swift will use message passing a large percentage of the time. So in C++, usually you're in more control in terms of when you decide whether you're going to be utilizing the indirect vtable or if you're going to be calling things directly. That's with the virtual keyword, but
right. Well,
that's where the V and V table comes from, basically supporting that language feature. And the nice thing about Swift is that it does that for you automatically. So it's more of an automatic transmission type thing. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing about Swift. The problem is the entire compile time business. And so there's the first thing we got to ask is that, like, why is message sending gone? And I have to imagine that pretty much the only reason is speed. What do you think, Andrew? Can you think of another reason why it's gone?
Well, they really think to them everything is about static analysis.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
That's really what they do. That's the main thing, you know. If it's not, you know, and they want, that's their hammer. So everything is a nail.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The more runtime stuff you can do without the compiler knowing about it, the less use there is, the less useful the static analysis is. To the extent that they've deprecated the ability to send a message to something in your Objective-C code without the compiler knowing what it is. You have to put those, you know, those pragma or whatever things around it to be sure that you're allowed to do it. That actually amazed me that they did that and there wasn't much of an outcry about that. This seems like the next logical step for that. They're like, you know what, damn it, we're making our own language. We're totally going to take that away from you because we never liked it.
It's interesting because even vtables defeat a certain amount of knowledge that can be done with
static analysis. It's still all known by the compiler.
It is type safe. You're right.
C++ isn't even, I don't remember where I read this, but you know, the idea that C++ is dynamic is actually kind of a lie, right? It's not dynamic binding. It's delayed binding. I think somebody mentioned it, might have even been you, because it's still all known by the compiler. It's not truly dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Yeah. So that's really insightful. Thanks. So I will say for
the... Oh, I've got more.
Good, good. Mm-hmm. I will say that if for the speed reason, so Christian Keenly had a tweet here that says that you may be doing something wrong if Swift's VTable performance is a gain is important to you. So the idea here is that message sending is slower than VTable, jumping through your VTable. And if you are actually, if you're actually worried about this, number one, it probably is not an issue because there are ways to make that faster, which I'll go into a little bit more detail later. And it's, you have to ask yourself, like, why, if you need to really crank through tons of messaging, like, what, maybe your objects are too fine-grained or something, or maybe it's a bad domain model, like, what's going on here? So I have to agree with that, that, and remember, the iPhone shipped on very weak hardware, and it was very fast with message sending, so I wouldn't, obviously message send is already very fast. And
well, one thing to keep in mind, though, is that a lot of, behind the scenes, Apple uses a lot of C++ precisely for speed.
Yes. I believe that mail.app and the original version of macOS 10 was written, it had its, basically its model objects, its mail kind of stuff, you know, to represent a message in Objective-C. And it was, everything was slow in, you know, the 10.0 days. But it got, a little birdie tells me that it was the model classes, the domain objects, were then rewritten in C++ and with attendant performance gains that were very, very important to make the app usable. So that's at least one. I've heard similar things. So yeah, it's, I'm not saying that, you know, that the VTable performance gain, that it's not, it doesn't, it's not important ever, but it's, but usually it's not the case. But if you, there are ways to work around it. In particular, the Greg Parker in his blog posting, his blog is called, I guess, well, at least a subset of his blog, it's called OBC Explain, and he talks about OBC Message Send VTable. And this was back in 2011, and I'll quote him here, OBC Message Send VTable is a version of Objective-C Message Send, OBC Message Send, used to optimize a few of the most commonly called methods. Most Objective-C methods are dispatched using a hash table lookup inside OBC Message Send. On x86-64, a few selectors can be dispatched using a C++-style virtual table, an array lookup, not a hash table. The compiler knows which selectors are optimized by the runtime, and it compiles the call site differently, calling the OBC Message Send fixup via a function pointer. At runtime, the OBC Message Send fixup places a function pointer with one of the OBC Message Send VTable functions, if the called selector is one of the optimized selectors. C++ VTables are notoriously fragile. The array offsets for each virtual method are hard-coded into the generated code. OBC's VTables are not fragile. Each VTable is built at runtime and updated when its method lists change. In theory, even the set of optimized methods could be changed. The non-fragile flexibility costs an extra memory load during dispatch. So OBC Message Send VTable is a good example of one of the optimizations they can do when during message sending. So you can be a more explicit thing. There are techniques like IMP caching, implementation caching, and other ways that you can implement and you can speed up message sending. So the important thing here is that speed, I don't think, is a real issue. And but so message sending's speed is an issue, but it turns out to be very important for architectural reasons in terms of how you build software. So, you know, a lot of times that when I talk about the importance of message sending is that it seems like it maybe is for esoteric reasons, live development objects, proxies, mocking, swizzling, these types of, you know, cool tricks. You're saying, well, do you actually need that in the day-to-day programming? And I have to say that, first off, I do need it, but I understand that other people don't program like I program. But it turns out that message sending is very important in terms of implementing software that can evolve correctly. So, We've talked about the hard coding method. You need to know things at compile time, and that turns out to be, you know, it's a huge stumbling block. In order to achieve Brad Cox's style, he, in his book Object-Oriented Programming Evolutionary Approach, he talks about the concept of software integrated circuits or software ICs. The idea that we can have these black boxes sitting on a circuit board that communicate with each other, and it's very much along the lines of Alan Kay's idea of cells communicating with each other, or nodes on a network sending messages to each other, is that you have the exposed surface, and what happens internally is, you know, with software, with ICs, it's literally a black box. But the idea is that is not your concern. And the problem with having to hard code these vtable indexes is that it makes software fragile. A good example of this is that in the BOS was a pretty famous operating system, well, I guess famous among Apple developers. In the 90s, that was when Apple was flailing around with Mac OS 8, couldn't seem to ship their update. Jean-Louis Gasset went and started a new computer company that both did hardware and software called B, and they had operating systems called BOS. And it was famously built on C++. And so they had the vtable problem. And they had the problem is that because you're hard coding indexes into the vtable, those, and then you have subclasses, you have this issue where you could not add methods later. And when you look at this, is obviously not a problem Apple has with Objective-C, that they can add methods as much as they want.
They did have that problem.
Oh yeah, what, how so?
With IVARs.
Yes, is right. With IVARs, that's exactly the same problem.
And they fixed it by changing the format such that they could fix it up at runtime.
Yeah, very good, yeah. Very good point. Yes, essentially they leveraged the dynamicism that Objective-C gave them, that they could actually fix that up.
Yeah.
So how BOS solved it was pretty primitive. So they define a class and they would just. They fill up a bunch of dummy methods. I think they'd like include 50 right. on them.
Yeah.
And, unused method one, unused method two, unused method three.
That's exactly what Apple did with IVARs for a while.
Yep. That's the standard way to do it.
And then what Apple did, because it was just IVARs, it wasn't methods, they could say, well, the last pointer, we'll make that a pointer to another set of memory.
Yep.
And put more. But of course, you can't do that with methods the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's. So in order for software to effectively communicate with each other, you really do need this higher level concept. Vtables is thus really too primitive to pull off what needs to be done in terms of a evolving kind of live software type system that we pretty much need. So it's an effective implementation if you're building something like Microsoft Word that's this huge app that you want to run fast and will never need to talk to the outside world. But I think the future of software, these smaller objects that are talking to each other, that are more live kind of objects, and vtables just don't cut the mustard. They don't apply the basic type of functionality that type of software needs. So in that way, Swift is a step back by not having message sending as the default way, especially because message sending is pretty fast. And obviously the Swift name kind of gives you an idea of they're obviously very performance focused.
Not fast enough.
Well, you could say that, but I don't know. I still stand with the idea that I think message sending can be added back. Chris Lattner tweeted that the most perplexing feedback on Swift, folks who see it and judge it as the end of a trek don't realize it as the start of a new world. A little bit hyperbolic, but
he's got his own reality distortion too.
But if you even see function calls, which are the most direct, you can turn those into message sends. And as my technology, mock override, allows you to replace arbitrary functions with other code. So you could conceivably have something that's similar to how Greg Parker talks about how Opsy message send vtable is implemented, where you can, especially if it's more cooperative with the dynamic linker and the mock O runtime model, or maybe it will need a revision, it's very feasible to make it so that you have all the speed of a C-style direct function call, where if you need to do something fancy, or if you you need to do something more dynamic, you can turn those into message sends. And that's kind of maybe a runtime version of Brad Cox, the Brad Cox idea of how to evolve systems. But this would allow architecturally it's not as great, but it would allow these kind of more fragile systems to take place, have the type of performance that they need, but also allow it to interoperate with a more evolving live type of system. And so message sending is really that's one part of the puzzle. Is also the lacking of dynamicism in Swift is also our friend NS class from string. You cannot just give us under Objective-C, you have NS class from string, which will give you a new class which you can instantiate. Josh Smith wrote a blog posting about instantiating classes by name in Swift. He does so by leveraging the Objective-C side of Swift. And this is really confusing to me. Like, not Josh Smith's article, more that I don't really know, like, if where Objective-C stands in terms of Swift. If they're kind of joined at the hip that Swift will never be independent from Objective-C, then I don't have a problem with Josh leveraging the Objective-C side of things. I mean, I don't have a problem with him in his implementation in the first place. It's the only way it can work. But will we see a pure Swift system in the future that there is no Objective-C? So a lot of people are talking about pure Swift code. And even though with the Jay Freeman quote about how it's like toll-free bridge from C++ to Objective-C, it's unclear to me like where Objective-C really stands in terms of Swift. And so Swift is lacking dynamicism, and while you can use Objective-C to provide it, it seems like it's not a first class feature, I should say, put it that way. So you might think, like, why is NS class from string important? And well, it's one of these like Brad Cox style type software IC things that it's one of the kind of software fundamentals about how you can architect things. And so under hood, you use things like NS class from string all the time. Like if you use nibs or zibs, how do you think those freeze-dried objects work? Those are strings that represent class names baked into some binary format, but you can, in the XML and the zib format, you can see it firsthand. You can see at a runtime, those strings are looked up, they're found at runtime to match classes, and those classes are instantiated. NS Undo Manager is a great example of something that is very hard to do in languages like C++ and that don't have dynamic dispatch, where the NS Undo Manager uses the ability where you can say, I can send messages to this object, and instead of actually executing those messages, it will just record them so that if the user goes to undo, then it just can pop the stack. And this is, I think maybe the Gang of Four book even has, I mean, like, how to implement undo or something like that. I remember reading in one of my big hardcover books. It feels like the Gang of Four book. But that's when you look at how that has to be implemented in a non-dynamic system, you're in a world of pain. Yeah, you have to like create command classes and for everything. Yep. And it's a lot of tedious work when the software already knows how to do it if you just let the runtime shine. And even things like Core Data with dynamic properties. If you want to build something like Core Data in pure Swift, you can't do it. It needs the type of runtime support that class clusters, that these types of technologies need a real kind of class from string and real message sending in order to pull off. So kind of basic type of stuff that we kind of assume that we have in the land of Cocoa. If we had this quote-unquote pure Swift that doesn't have the message sending, doesn't have the introspection of or the class from string type stuff, it just really can't be created at all. And now I'm not going to say that Apple wouldn't, add some special features for themselves to do it, but your software can't do it. So I've been on teams that we've re-implemented EOF, which is Core Data's predecessor, and we could do it ourselves because we had message sending foundational and NS class from string foundational technologies that we could roll our own, which is great because then Apple ended life to EOF and we just could keep on chugging. So So long story short, in summary, the Swift is a really good thing. It's going to raise our collective IQ a lot. It's going to introduce a lot of ideas to programmers who are just too busy. Maybe do you even study this stuff for themselves. Now this can kind of be foisted upon them. And, but the message, the lack of dynamism, the message sending to classroom strings type stuff is really my one serious complaint about Swift. It has a bunch of smattering of other issues, but that is, if I could, you know, change one thing about it, I would make it so we could have a more dynamic system, perhaps in the way I outlined, that you wouldn't need to give up very much performance. But it's really important just for how software is architected in the first place. Like I said, I'm on Team Alan Kay about, I think, you know, cells communicating, nodes sending messages. This is fundamental about how we can build large, complicated systems that actually work. And without this fundamental, I'm worried that it will be a setback in terms of how software is architected, and will kind of build more fragile systems that can't evolve the way that it will make software less soft. That's it. I'm sure you have a lot to say.
I do. Let's see. So I would also add in here that I'm going to use it when they finish it up and they ship it. There's a lot of things to take advantage of.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Certainly the fact that it there is no C in it, that there are no pointers. There's a lot more safety for the apps that you write, and that will help quite a bit. I'm also, you know, of the things I'm going to say next, these are my quibbles with it. These are my issues with it, but they're not showstoppers. I would tend to say that when you say all of C is very complex, and therefore Swift is not that complex when you compare it against all of C. Well, but we don't use most of C.
That's true.
Anymore.
Yeah.
So saying Swift is not that complex when you compare it to all of C, yeah, but it's still more complex than the C and Objective-C that we do use.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
So I would also have a quibble with it being easier to learn. I think there are a lot of things that they did in Swift in order to make it interoperate well with Cocoa.
Sure.
The initializer stuff is relatively complicated, mm-hmm. and is pretty much the Objective-C customs about using initializer methods codified. Mm-hmm. It's going to be very confusing to people who don't know Objective-C. I would be curious whether people coming to iOS or Mac from other platforms who've never been exposed to Objective-C will just think Swift is incredibly hard to figure out because it's just all those things.
But that's a really good point. Yeah, we're used to how Objective-C does things, so we're like, oh yeah, that's a really good point.
Right. So we think it all makes sense, but mm-hmm. other people are going to say, my God, why are you doing all this? Why do you need this complexity? Mm-hmm. I mentioned possibly years ago now that it seemed to me that most people who were coming to the Mac or iOS, especially iOS, came to Objective-C grudgingly.
Yeah.
They just didn't like it. They didn't like the brackets. They didn't like message passing. They didn't like any of it. Mm-hmm. And I had a bunch of people respond to me on Twitter saying, no, I'm new to Apple and I love it. And it seemed like they were trying to argue against me. No, lots of people come to it and love it. But the fact that there's been no outcry at the loss of message sending really makes me think, I mean, is there anybody, like nobody's complaining about this in a public forum? Mm-hmm. And maybe they're all just, well, that's Apple. We knew it was coming. But doesn't that really mean that, you know, were none of you really Objective-C fans then? It's been really puzzling to me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I do think that, you know, even when we talked about ARC was moving towards static analysis over runtime mm-hmm. stuff. They've been moving towards this for a long time. ARC has a lot of the same problems. I really liked our episode where you talked about that because you really did make the detailed points about what was going to be lost by compiling in all of these retain release calls mm-hmm. so that you could never take them out again without a lot of extra work. I do think that Swift is meant for systems programming. I mean, that's why they're making it. So the operator overloading is needed for writing libraries because they don't have the operators as part of the language. A lot of the operators you're using, they're written in the library that they write using Swift. So that's why there's operator overloading, and that's why we have to deal with the fact that anyone can overload operators, mm-hmm. which I think is going to be a horrible temptation for most people. Mm-hmm. You almost never need to overload operators, and everyone will, because it's a nice, shiny new toy. I think the speed issues, I think the issue again is with systems programming. They want this to replace C and C++. And the only way you can do that is if you make a lot of compromises about dynamism at the level of the language. And, you know, so they, and they want that, but they want that without pointers. Well, they're going to get it, but now the rest of us need to use that too. So, you know, Apple is pretty much using C and some C++ as their systems level language. We didn't have to use C. We could use Objective-C for our applications. Right. Now they're combining them. Now we're going to have to use their C for our applications. And it's just, it might not be as good a fit. When Gwattner said end of a trek, not the end of a trek, I guess is how you put it. Yeah, that sounds good. But the foundations of a language are going to be extremely difficult to change later.
Sure.
You just can't, you've buried them deep. Getting back down to them will be a huge amount more effort than if you did it. What I found with every application I've ever written, and again, these are not as complex as an entire OS, is that your foundational decisions, your initial decisions, have a have an enormous impact on what happens later. You can never undo them later. It's just never practical. So this idea that, well, we'll add message passing later, if they ship 1.0 with these foundations, they can never add message passing as the same foundational thing that Objective-C had. They just can't. If they say they can, they're lying. And so I hope they don't. I hope they don't say that. I hope they kind of own up to it. That, you know, message passing is just not going to be a real foundational thing for a language. What I was hoping, my thinking once they introduced Swift was, okay, now they have to join it at the hip with Cocoa. But the only way they can make really rapid progress in the future is if they can say, well, yes, right, your old apps are in Cocoa, but your new apps use this new framework. Because they couldn't introduce, they would never have been able to introduce Swift if they had to introduce frameworks and a language now. So they had to do the language now and they do the frameworks later. The only way that I think this will be really interesting is if they do relatively quickly introduce Swift-only frameworks. Which do take all of these nifty new ideas, these functional programming-like ideas from Swift, and base a new framework about them. Because if they can only use the Cocoa concepts, that's going to hold them back. They just, there's so much they can't do without. But as you said, there's so much that's in our current frameworks that rewriting, they'll have to just basically take all new concepts. Like they won't be able to use message passing and dynamism the way they've used it for core data, the way they've used it for nibs. You don't need it for nibs. They use it for nibs that way because that's just the way they did it. That's the, they built it on the framework that they had. But you aren't really meant to be able to take your nibs, your zibs, your storyboards, and create classes that the program doesn't already know about. It's not meant to be that dynamic. It was because that's how they did it, but it doesn't mean to be. So you could actually make a new zip format that basically requires a lot of this data that's statically held in your application in order to work right. Because they are meant to be joined at the hip like that. It's just nobody made it like that because they didn't need to. So I would be curious if they're basically going to give us a you know, if they get to that point where they have, okay, new Swift stuff that's only Swift, new frameworks, you know, we basically won't have text-only zibs anymore, text-only resources that are entirely based on dynamic lookup. They'll do something else that's more static. And they might have to do something like that for Cocoa, for, excuse me, for core data as well, something which is, to their mind, equally progressive, equally innovative, but then more static. But I share your concern that I've seen large-scale applications written in C++. They are very fragile. You can't jam stuff in there as needed. When you've got to get do something quickly, you have to rewrite whole large amounts of code to introduce new concepts instead of introducing some sort of at the periphery. Now, it's often better to do that, but when you're on the budget, when you're on a timetable, the jamming stuff into a fragile, static, giant code base is immensely painful and hard to and leads to highly unmaintainable code bases. I mean, the, you know, the silver bullet that Objective-C gives you is this better ability to handle the complexity of large code bases. And yeah, I'm concerned with it.
Yeah.
And so we'll see how it goes. I mean, these are smart people. I'm sure they've seen that issue, that fact that what they're giving up. I hope so. And I hope they have really great ideas to how to fix it. But we're not seeing them yet. Hmm. And, you know, we're starting off.
Yeah.
But I do think, I mean, this, it really does feel like C4 all over again. Because we're just not seeing a lot of people saying, hey, don't you realize what you're taking away from us? And you know, we're not complaining. Nobody's complaining. Mm-hmm. And if we don't complain now, you know, again, they'll close off the foundations, they'll seal it all up, and that'll be it. Mm-hmm. That'll be the end. Although it really is. That's the trouble. I mean, maybe a lot of people just think it already is too late. Because it is.
Yeah.
They've already really finished this stuff. We don't get a vote.
File radar.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll do that. So it's interesting, and there's so much promise, but it's weird. It's weird that they were able to do this. It's a coup.
Yeah.
So that's it for me.
That's it for me.
All right. We'll see you next time.